Hey there, Brenda.
It's Carol.
Exactly.
So which leg are we operating on?
You mean arm?
It's all connected.
Asking the right question can greatly impact your future.
Are you sure you're an orthopedist?
Actually, I'm a Sagittarius.
Especially when it comes to your finances.
Do you have a question?
Are you a certified financial planner?
Yes, I'm a CFP professional.
CFP professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's gotta be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Crack Podcast.
What's up, y'all? This is DeMarcus from the Crack Podcast. Check out part two with Robbie Rogers.
Robbie, I got to ask you, because leading up to this today, I was like, you know what? I heard about All American, but I never watched it. So like 4 days ago, I started watching season one.
Yeah,
and find myself 6 a.m. still watching this show, and I'm like, yo, how come I didn't know about this, and how come nobody told me Robbie was a part of this? Like,
funny,
how'd you get into it?
That's is a lot of people that, you know, kind of hear about it but don't necessarily watch it, and then when they start watching it, they realize it's like so much more than just about like football, or you know, it's very soapy, and there's all the love triangles, and you like want him to end up with like Olivia or Layla, and like, you know, you're torn through all that stuff and all the secrets. So I got involved in just like production and producing and storytelling my first year with the Galaxy. There was these two producers that came to me to do a comedy that was like loosely based off my life, but it was like a half hour about like this gay soccer player that comes out and like, but has no idea how to be gay. Like never, you know, I know that sounds weird, but like never been on first date, never went to a bar, never. It was like, well, that is true. Like I had never done all those things. So you're having to do that as like a full grown ass adult. Like, you know, imagine if you're going on your first date with a girl, you know, as a 20-something-year-old. You're like, yeah. Awkward. You're supposed to be
awkward. It's like that 40-year-old virgin movie.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, these are still so awkward though, Robbie. These are still awkward.
So we sold this project to ABC. And they were at Universal. So I just loved it so much and started to work with them on a few things. Started to work with my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, on a few things. And I've just slowly gotten more and more into, you know, the idea of just like storytelling and being able to affect people who are sitting in front of their TVs in a very like emotional way. It was just very exciting to me. I kind of love that. So I'd met Spencer Pasinger through one of my best friends, and he kind of told me about his career and his story. And I was like, this is just, I really connected with like the outsider vibe of like, you know, he was between Beverly Hills and South Los Angeles. And kind of when he left Crenshaw, they were like, you know, you're a sellout, you're going to Beverly Hills. And then when he's in Beverly Hills, they're like, you know, you're from,
you're not one of us.
You're not one of us. So
right.
It was like back and forth. So I kind of felt like that as a gay man and as at times as a soccer player, like, am I one of these guys? But I'm not. And I don't really feel comfortable, you know, around gay men. So like, where am I? So that was my initial connection to it. And so I got home and I was just telling Greg, my husband, about it. I was like, it's such a great idea. I think it'd be such a cool show. And then we started to develop. We found a great writer, and we found, you know, Rob Hardy, directed the pilot, and we just put a great team together.
Did you have any kind of influence in the story, any of the storylines or any of the?
Yeah, I mean, with the whole pitch and everything, I worked with a girl named April Blair, and we came up
awesome.
With the whole idea.
Nice. That's and now, huge, Robbie. Wow.
Yeah. It's been really fun. It's been really fun. I've learned a lot, but now we have Nkechi Okoro-Carroll, who's this incredible showrunner. And she has really, you know, just kind of taking the mantle and led the way. And so now we're breaking episodes 6 and 7 for our season 3. We've been doing Zooms, like Zoom writing rooms. And I think we'll start shooting again in September, October. I mean, depending on COVID, I mean, who knows, but I think September, October, we'll start shooting.
Listen, Robbie, I dabbled into a little acting last year. So if you need a,
oh, shit.
A here we go. I'm just saying. I get a text from Mo.
Mo,
yes. Oh, Mo, no. Definitely. He's been dying.
Like, yeah. I'm like, I would love to. I just don't know. Like, it's the roles are so specific. And but hey, if an opportunity comes up, I'll let you know.
Mo wants to be the next Denzel Washington.
I wish I could help him out.
Robbie, I'm going to tell you right now, I do not want to see Gooch on the big screen.
Oh, damn.
I do not want to see his ass on those screens.
What's wrong with me? I'm like the next Will Smith.
Yeah, I'm hating. No, you're not. No, you're not. Stop it. But, hey, Robbie, so I say this with, you know, so much respect, but I almost wanted to cancel this show today. And you know why? You know why?
No, tell me.
Because
you know why?
Because I was watching All American. Yo, I can't stop it. I literally can't stop watching it. Awesome. Like, literally, when we get done taping, I'm going straight back to watching All-American. The show is crazy, man.
I'm so happy you guys, you know, there's an incredible team of people. And the writer's room is like, it's just, I was saying to, you know, there's been so much going on that's really like opened our eyes, all the writers, you know, it's going, all the racial injustice and police brutality. And I just like sent all of our writers, it's a very, very diverse writer's room. And I was like, I didn't want to like say like, hey guys, how you doing and everything. I wrote them an email just being like, I feel very lucky to be in this writer's room, which is so diverse because we have these conversations every day for the past 3 years. And it's been so educational for me and interesting. And it's such a safe place, the writer's room, to talk about like, hey, I am a gay white man from Palos Verdes who was told not to go to Crenshaw. Whatever. But now I'm learning in this room, like just the nuance of our differences and similarities. And so I've just been extremely blessed to be on that show and to work on it.
Crenshaw is a real neighborhood and you have great people there as well. And ask you a question, because I watched every episode full. I'm a big time supporter, but I feel like season two took a different spin. Is there a different type of writer? Because for me, as a black male.
Yeah, it was the same writer's room.
Okay. Don't ruin it yet, though. I haven't gotten that far yet.
You know, the story organically moves and shifts, and try to use Spencer as an inspiration for a lot of the episodes, or you know, kind of intertwine his story, because of course we have to take kind of our creative liberties so that it's television, you know, it's entertaining. But no, it's the same group of people, for season three. So I don't want to root for Gooch, but I'm really, really excited for season three just because of the ending of season two. Sorry, Gooch, I'm like trying to talk about it.
But right, get out of here, right?
We get to shoot in new locations. We get to like, it's really, you know, we were invested in like what's going on in Beverly Hills, and now we get to be invested really in like Spencer's life.
So, without ruining the story and the plot, have you guys got an extension for more seasons yet?
We have at least one more season. So
okay, so you sort of four season deal.
Our third season, and then we're doing I think 20 episodes, which is a lot. I know, 16 last year. So yeah, 20 episodes. I mean, as long as COVID lets us, I don't know what's going to happen. But, and then I assume we'll have a season four. It's been doing so well. I think it was one of the
Ride that wave with COVID right now. Ain't nobody doing anything besides Netflix.
Yeah.
It's been, I mean, it's pretty crazy how many people watch the show because of, you know, COVID and Netflix. So
definitely the reason that was definitely one of the highlights of my, quarantine experiences is watching All American, man. But so here's my biggest thing. I'm so excited that you brought that. You met this gentleman, Spencer, and you brought this to the table, to all the rest of the producers. But I feel that there's not enough representation of soccer in America in a good light, right? When you watch ESPN, they speak about soccer. They always like try to joke it, or if it's not because they don't know much about it. And when you see a soccer player on a TV show or soap opera or something like that, it's always like a chubby kid with big shin guards on. You know what I mean? It's never like the stud, like how you were growing up, how Beasley and Gooch were, right? Popular in school, popular with friends, and also was a hell of a soccer player. I'm so excited now you're in this field. I know you're going to help and make that change, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and I don't think it's not really a secret, so I can talk about it, but I'm developing a show. Do you guys know Jorge Villafana and his story?
Yeah.
I don't know his story.
I don't know.
So fascinating. So his mom literally, you know, while she was pretty much pregnant, like came over to the United States and had him here so he could be an American. And then mm-hmm. he went back to Mexico to kind of grow up, and then came back when he was in high school and he entered a reality show competition with Chivas USA.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
And won a competition and was offered a massive MLS contract of $700 a week, $700 a month or whatever it is, you know, yeah. the developmental like shit money that you can mm-hmm. barely survive on, or you don't survive on. He still supports his family, ended up, you know, playing for the U.S. national team.
Yep.
Never really knew his dad. He ended up like walking through the tunnel with like his mom's last name on his back. So I'm doing a show right now at Warner Brothers, and we'll be pitching it soon to like other places. Amazing. That is based off his life. And it's a reality show competition about this boy, slightly like all American. You know, there's a lot of the same kind of discussions that we can have about race and socioeconomics and like the American dream, what it means for some people. Does it still exist?
Man, Robbie, I want to be like you when I grow up.
Yeah, straight up, man. I'm getting inspired just listening.
Really fascinating story. So we're just working on it now and working with a writer who is like a Mexican American. And so we'll see. Oh, we have this great director who his dad used to play. His name is Marco Sega. He's done a bunch of shows you guys have watched, but his dad used to play with like Pele for like the Cosmos and
stuff.
There
you go. Nice.
But you can shoot it and like, you know, it's exciting, like Nike commercials where it's like you are in it, you have the music and the chain link mm-hmm. fence, and like, and it's not like this glossy, you know, weird wide shot of guys like walking around a soccer field, but like really intimate and then this emotional soapy story. So we're working on that now. We'll see if someone buys it. I think it's interesting. I think it's very, you know, relevant to our time. And like you said, no one's really done it. So,
Robbie, I'm going to give a round of applause, man, because I like my round of applause button. And also, these things is big, man. I've been fighting for this so long for this representation the right way. And for you at the
helm. You remember a lot of people that buy these things, they don't have the same connection to, you know, things as we do. So.
Definitely.
Robbie, I wanted to transition away from All American because I don't want you to ruin it. I don't want you to ruin it. I don't want you to ruin it for me just yet. But
Emmy,
there's a topic that I wanted to ask you because I've heard you speak about it obviously in the past a little bit, and I've heard interviews, and in a way I can relate because of my upbringing. And you spoke about, you know, being brought up in a very Christian household, right? And that had influence in regards to you coming out and everything. And I actually think I read somewhere that you're raising your children Jewish. I don't know if that's true or not. So I need you to kind of walk me through that, obviously.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different moving parts, right?
Definitely. There are, you know, so I was raised in a very Catholic conservative family. Palos Verdes is like a small Texas town in Los Angeles. It's like the only place that votes red. There's actually a Trump golf course there. I don't know. So, I, you know, from a very young age and going to Catholic school, going to, you know, modern day, you have religion class every day, and you kind of, in some ways I really loved it. Like I love, being able to go to church and, you know, whether you're spiritual, religious or whatever, like for me, I like to be able to like talk to God and be able to like
have faith.
Have faith and like there's something bigger than me and all these things that I'm doing and we're talking about, like there's purpose to it. So I've always believed that, and I don't really call myself, you know, Catholic or Christian, but I've now become just like a spiritual person. So a lot of that was some of the positive stuff that came out of my childhood and being so involved, you know, with the church, you know. And then, you know, there's the dark side of, I think a lot of us have, like, whether you're gay or whatever, you have like Catholic guilt. Like my mom really struggled with it when she was going to get a divorce. Hmm. She was like so ashamed that she was going to divorce that she was like, so, you know, she just like was so angry about it and so sad about it. And so, you know,
like disappointed in herself that she
had to go through. Herself. Yeah. Exactly. So I grew up with that my whole life of, you know, I'm gay. And if these people that I love know, I'm going to be like exiled from my family and the church, and they say all these, you know, horrible things are going to happen to me. So I really struggled with it until I've studied different religions and I'm kind of more just open now to a bunch of different possibilities.
Right.
But until I kind of was like, you know, it doesn't need to just be this, whatever.
How did the Jewish part of raising your kids, how did that come
about? So Greg and I really, again, because there's so many positives, I believe in like religion and being spiritual and faith, we wanted to raise them in a religion. And so they go to a Reform Judaism school.
Mm-hmm.
Which like one of their one of their teachers is like transgender, and there's like men and women that are rabbi. Like, it's just more progressive. But what it does is it teaches them about community. It teaches them about, you know, the first
inclusiveness.
Inclusiveness, yeah. The Old Testament, asking questions, asking why you want to believe in this or why this story, is this story real? What, like, just a really question faith and to learn about it. And again, like Greg always makes fun of me, like on Netflix, I'm always watching like a Jesus documentary or Bible documentary, but I'm so fascinated in the history and all the lessons. I think those are important. And you take from it, I hope, like what you need, and it's right. Different for everybody. So I hope that both of them are just interested in religion and ask the questions and find their own version of whatever their spirituality is. But I do think it's important to just at least introduce it to kids.
Right.
In my opinion.
It's funny, 'cause like, obviously I grew up Catholic, very religious, very Catholic, Sunday mass every Sunday, you know? And when I heard that interview, I was like, wow, yeah, I can't imagine how he would be kind of scared to even come out to a person like his mother, who he finds trust and confidence in, right? And then when I actually heard when you came out, I was in Spain at the time, and I was like, I was reading the news, I was like, is this real? Like, I was like, I had no idea. I was like, Robbie, no, nobody had any kind of, I had no clue. And then I always thought, I was like, do you, you know, because you retired right after, I was like, do you wish now looking back that you had come out earlier in your career?
Yeah, I mean, look, I again, as we speak about faith and things happening for a reason, like, of course, all this stuff had to line up for me to have the courage to whatever and then retire and come back to LA. And so things would have worked out differently. I wouldn't change anything. But part of me does wish, like, oh, I wish I had the courage. Like, what would it be like in college my freshman year if I would have, like, come out to my team? Like, would, if I was really good, would if someone have signed me? I think so. But, like, would they have? Would I have been able to go to Heron Vane? Would if he had called me up to the national team? I think so. But, like, I just ask those questions, and part of me wishes that I had the courage to do that. All the ifs, yeah. So, like, it's hard to say, yes, I should have done this, but I definitely think about it a lot. And I think, like, a lot of people would have supported me, and I think a lot of people would have more quickly gotten, like, oh, yeah, this is possible. Like, you know. Yeah.
Did you, when you retired right afterwards, was that in relation to that announcement, or did you want to retire in general? Well,
I thought that I can't play soccer if I'm gay. Mm. Like, there's no way. The things I've heard in locker rooms, there's no chance I'm going to put myself in that locker
room. That hurts to hear, like, you felt that way. You know what I mean? Like,
oh my God. When I was at Leeds, I remember being on a bike. This was like after I was learning about, this is the first time I learned about Justin Fashanu, who's like the most fascinating character to me. And he was the first, like, oh, he played for Norwich City and Nottingham and a few other teams, actually a bunch of other teams. So he came out and he committed suicide later in his life, but he was also the first black footballer in England worth £1 million. It's just like such an interesting story. So I just learned about him on BBC, and I was sitting at Leeds in our, you know, you have like lunch together, and then we started riding the bike, and I was sitting with some guys that were just like talking about how disgusting it could be for men to love each other. Just the physical act of how disgusting that is. And this is, I'm obviously closeted at the time. I just learned about Justin Fashion and him committing suicide. And I'm at Leeds by myself. And you guys know how, like, you know, isolating and, like, you know, it's just like, it takes so much just to be totally comfortable in a situation, especially when you're new and trying to play and blah, blah, blah. So I was just like, fuck this. If I ever do come out, which I came out probably like 8 months later or something, like, I'm definitely going to step away from this. But, you know, it was.
Who supported you in that decision and kind of you confined in before you made that decision?
I like came out to my family first, family, some of my friends, you know, people like, you guys know, like Sasha and you know, some other people like that I grew up with. One of my buddies, Andy Iroh, I don't know if you guys know him. He played with me in Columbus, a few other places. So I just shared it with like people really close to me. And I actually wasn't thinking of even sharing it in a more public way, to be honest. I had written something that sat on my computer for a few months. It like sat on my desktop, and I, had told Leeds that I was retiring, that I was done. And I was slowly telling more and more people that I was gay. So I thought, you know, they would find out soon. Mm-hmm. And then, I felt like I was still kind of like hiding a secret, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like I'd be out at a bar and someone like, oh, you played at Leeds and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, yeah, that's me. And I'd like put my hat down a little bit, but yeah. So I was just like, you know, I'm going to come out. I was like, I'm going to just post this on my like Facebook and then like, hopefully some people read it. And then people stop asking me, like literally
log off.
Yeah. Right. I did. I shut my computer I logged off and turned off my phone, but I didn't think it was going to be what it was. I didn't think I would have the support that I had. I thought there might be some people would like kind of talk about it and maybe be an article and then it'd be over the next day and people would be like, all right, he's done. So I didn't realize that like people would be, I didn't realize that like it would be such a topic, I guess.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Do you, so you retired.
Retired.
Out of fear of what would happen. And then you came back when you came to LA. Do you think you would have came out of retirement had it not been in LA? In such a like a progressive city, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and also my family close by.
My family as well.
So no, I definitely would have. And also Bruce was so supportive and the way he handled it was great. And like Lannon would like text me. And I remember, so what happened was I came out to LA to get my student visa. I was going to go back to London to go to London College of Fashion. I got into this course, this menswear design technology course. And so I got in, I like forced my way in because I had never been to art school. Yeah. In London, I came back to LA to get my student visa. And Bruce is like, if you ever want to train or come watch training, like just stop by, like you are welcome here always. You want to come watch a game. So I went to speak to a bunch of kids that are part of their GSAs, which are the Gay Straight Alliances. Like Nike had 500 kids come to campus and they're like, come speak to these kids. And again, this was me who knew nothing about being like, what kind of advice am I going to give these kids that are out in high school leading their organizations that are like fearless?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. I spoke to these kids and they're all asking questions and I literally didn't have that many answers for them. And I left and my agent was with me. He's, you know, Sean Higgins, who was in Portland at the time. And I said to Sean, I was like, I think I just need to go train. Like I need to just go see if I can train and get through it and see if like what's going to happen. So he called Bruce and Bruce was like, yeah, come on through. And so I was texting with Landon and he's at first was like, it's going to be weird at first, but then people will get over it. And then it was like the night before my first training, Landon texted me. He's like, you know, Bruce talked to everybody and no one cares. No one cares. So like, just come. And I was still, of course, nervous for, you know, whatever. For
personal reasons. Yeah.
I'm like, I got a shower with all these guys. What are they going to say to me? Are they going to like walk out of the shower when I walk in? I was like, fuck, I've been showering them my whole life. Like, I don't care, but are they going to care?
Yeah.
So that's what I was like. You know, everyone asked me, like, what are the scariest things? I was like, it wasn't the stadium. Like, I don't give a fuck about the stadiums or the fans. It was like, how am I going to be treated in a locker room with guys that become brothers and family,
right, your teammates,
yeah, me.
And how'd that go? Any hiccups?
No, not really. Like, okay, so you guys can. It's very different, okay. But let me just—it's a little bit similar to like, you know, I think that, let's say, like racially, you know, sometimes we're not sensitive to the people that are around us. So if you've been in a locker room your whole life and you make, you know, gay jokes and whatever, then someone comes in and like sometimes they're just like they're more aware of what they're saying, but they're also like they're a bit weird about it. Like mm-hmm. don't know what they
yeah, say. They don't know how to say it. Yeah. Yeah.
They don't know how to say it. So I think if you're not like I'm not saying that we're the same in any way, but like you have all these white people and then you have like a black footballer or soccer player come in and it's like they wanted everything to be cool, but like they're not totally know how to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like a little bit of this awkwardness and also like and then eventually people would like break the ice and I make fun of like Alan Gordon for being straight and then he makes fun of people for being gay and then we laugh and we get on with it. But it was definitely the weird, like, you know, you just got to get used to what you're not used to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I go back just to, I mean, not to go back to the show All American because I'm just starting the, you know, through episode two. But even when he first went to Beverly Hills and, you know, he's meeting his new teammates. And, you know, the white guy says, you know, so are you a Crip or a Blood?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, just things like that. I mean, just what you're talking about, I can see with that, how you relate. Yeah, I understand exactly what you mean, 100%.
Yeah, and a lot of that stuff is based really off Spencer's experience. So
exactly.
When he tells us that stuff in the writer's room, you're just like, that's crazy that people
So he does have a lot of input, and it is closely based to his real-life story, the show?
A lot of it. A lot of the soapy stuff we've, manipulated. Yeah. But a lot of it, relationships and all that stuff is.
Okay, Rob, this is the Crack Podcast. Me trying to keep everything real, authentic. So I want to be real with you as a person who loves All American. The part I can't get over is these Bloods hanging out in a cafe shop in Crenshaw. I can't get over that shit. Yo. I can't get over that. I love All American, but I can't get over that part.
I will tell everyone that today. Funny, we shoot at Venice Park. And the first season, so many times we shoot there, we'd get like 11, 12 o'clock at night because we do night shoots. Yeah. And like all these bloods would show up and pretty much be like, all right, we need $1,000. We're going to protect you, but you have to pay for our services.
Wow.
I'm like, all right, like, okay, yeah. So the money. And they'd like have coffee with us and they're super chill. And then eventually we have this little tiny line producer. Her name's Lorietta. And she was like, I'm not paying you guys anymore, but you can work for the show. But you, I'm not paying you $1,000. This is ridiculous. So like now a few of the guys like actually work for the show. And they'll come to the writers and give our stories and talk about like their experiences in Compton or in Crenshaw or whatever. And it's just so fascinating. It's crazy.
Yeah, definitely. But we got to talk some soccer talk a little bit and your experience a little bit.
I guess we can talk about that.
but who introduced you to the game?
I started playing just on the side of one of my sisters. Like everyone plays here in California. I was just, you know, probably like 3 or 4 years old. AYSO was going on, I'd play on the sidelines. But I didn't really get introduced to it until the World Cup here. Colombia, USA, I was at that game.
Wow.
And I was like, this is crazy. Like, I want to do this.
And your experience with U.S. national team, you know, do you think that you got what you deserve in terms of the call-ups, in terms of the caps? I mean, because, again, you're my favorite player on this podcast right now. I hope you know that.
Right? he said it a couple times
before. Yeah, he did.
But keep it real. It's the crack. Do you really feel that you got suggested?
I think I wish I would have gone to the World Cup. Bob's, you know, the World Cup. When we had, like, preseason down in Princeton. I felt like I should have, you know, seized that opportunity and I think I like
which year was it? Sorry,
I don't know.
2010.
2010. I like really wanted. I don't know if I should have or shouldn't have. Like it was, you know, Bob, you know, called up guys that he thought were gonna like who I really respect. By the way, like he thought guys he got, but like Charlie was injured and he brought a bunch of strikers and he did that. Like I think it was kind of, you know, it was tough. But
did Bob play favoritism? Like bringing on guys like DeMarcus Beasley over you and stuff like that.
In those times, me and Bob wasn't seeing eye to eye. I was in and out a lot. So
yeah, and look at like of course I think you know a lot of us thought like Sasha, all of us thought we should be on the team, but that doesn't mean we should have been on the team. But you know I think that Bob was a very honest coach and really tough, and you know I really respect him, you know. So, you know, I just thought like, oh, that was my opportunity. I should have been more confident. I should have been more, I should have had like more swag like a lot of you guys did. I just didn't have
it. I told you, I was like, man, dude, you have everything. Like, just be more confident in yourself.
I'm not that person, you know. I think what makes you guys and certain guys special, and I always talk about this, is like there is a natural killer instinct, like coolness, swag to you guys. And the same with Clint and the same, you know, maybe Landon didn't have it as much as he could have and he would have been even more incredible. But like there's guys that, you know, you watch a lot of these European players with all these guys that are really good and they can walk into a locker room or walk onto a field and they feel like they belong. And it didn't matter how fast or technical or whatever, and how much I love the game, I just never quite had that confidence. And so it's not something that you can teach.
I remember coming into that, you know, into that camp and I was on the outskirts, you know what I'm saying? In January, this is when I was at Rangers in January, I had, you know, I had a good couple months that were really good score and assist and whatever, but then I got injured. And then basically the last 3 months before that camp, I didn't play, you know, I maybe played 3 games or something like that. So, you know, for me going to that camp, my mindset was, this is it. You know, this is it. I mean, I'm not a spot with the national team. I gotta, like you said, have that killer instinct, have that mindset that, you know, this is it. This is going to be my third World Cup. I'm not letting this slip through my fingers. And, you know, my mindset going into there was like, okay, I'm outside looking in, but this is not going to let, you know, I'm not gonna let this slip.
And to be honest, like you guys had it, and I can go back. There's a number of American players, but like I think it's one thing that Americans lack.
Yes,
like you know, guys go to Europe and they get scared, and you see them play in the MLS. I know the quality, you know, it's not always can't always compare, but like some good players in the MLS, and it's not easy to play in Houston in the middle of summer. you know, it's 100, whatever. But like, so the quality I feel like is there in a lot of guys, but like, I do think a lot of us lack this like natural swag killer instinct. And, you know, Bob talked about it. Bruce kind of talks about it. Jurgen even, you know, he talks about it, but like,
I guess he's not a fan.
I'm not huge fans of certain people, but it's very true. And so, you know, I don't know how you instill that in young players.
Does Spencer have it?
Spencer, yeah. Hey, there's all of our other sports, we have it. Basketball, football, baseball. These guys are like.
So what's the difference between that and soccer?
I don't know.
The difference is the dominant sport is in this country, whereas in soccer, the dominant is outside in Europe.
I think what Bees was saying, like he had to make it. And I think that's what Spencer, the character, as well as in real life, he feels he had to make it. His family's, you know, lifestyle is on his shoulders. He has no plan B. And maybe our culture for soccer in America is too much plan B and C's. While in Europe, France, any other country, you know, some of those guys, this is like, this is what I want to do. I know I want to do this from 14, 16 years old. I want to be a professional soccer player. There's no other
choice. Wouldn't you think that's a blessing and a curse, though? Exactly. Like, it's an advantage and it's an opportunity to have more than one.
And that's what what Europe kind of envies us about, that we can go to college and still become a pro. But then we're trying to change our culture to become more like Europe. So it's kind of a catch 22, right? What's the real right thing to do?
Yeah, and we all have, you know, if Caleb wanted to play soccer, I would be nervous for him to just sign and go to an academy. I'd almost still want him to try to get an education. And so
it is
a tough balance.
Tough balance, man. Tough.
Robbie,
balance.
I got a quick question, and this is off topic, and we don't have to spend a lot of time. Somebody said this to me a long time ago, before you got married, obviously, so I hope your husband doesn't get offended. They go, yo, Robbie is like Brad Pitt in LA, hot commodity. Everybody's going after him. I need to understand what it was when you first came out and like you were getting all that attention. Were you just like
lucky had no DMs?
Your phone was going off the hook. Tell him.
I honestly did not feel that way.
Yeah, from your facial expression, don't lucky.
You wasn't knocking him down, Robbie.
I didn't really. I'm not that kind of person. Like I kind of fall in love with someone after I have like five or six dinners with them and get to know them. So I'm never, again, I was saying to you guys, like I never go on like first dates or like any of those things. I never was like just doing like one night stands. So, you know, it didn't change when I came out and, you know, of course there's just random people that hit you up, but it's kind of, so busy with like trying to get fit and trying to make Bruce happy and trying to stay healthy and trying to do like whatever press the MLS wanted me to do, that like everything else was kind of a blur. And it wasn't really until my second year that I was able to totally enjoy it, when I was like, all right, I need to just like calm down. And that was like the year we won the championship again. And it was just like, there was enough like noise going on with like, was this going to be Lands last year? And is this Robbie's this year, that like, I could kind of like just settle into the, like all the other press, that like, I wasn't having to focus totally on myself.
Definitely.
So I didn't really, to be totally honest, I didn't really experience that. I didn't experience like all those people reaching out, and if they did, they're hitting up, you know, the wrong phone number.
they got ignored for sure.
Yeah, my other phone.
Yo, speaking of soccer and you know, winning career or winning titles and playing with Landon and Bruce, what in your whole soccer career, what was your most memorable, I guess, moment, achievement, whatever you want to throw in there?
I mean, just purely soccer was probably winning the championship in 2014. Just when we won in 2008, I couldn't totally enjoy it with my family. I was still like hiding such a secret and wasn't totally myself. So we won with Columbus, but in Los Angeles in 2008, and then 2014 we won again in LA, but with LA. And it was just weird how similar but different they were, and how different I was emotionally to be able to like just enjoy that with everyone. Like, literally after I won 2008, I went home to my parents' house in Huntington Beach, and I sat on my bed and just like went to bed. And I was like, it was depressing. I was like, if this is it, like I don't feel like.
All right, what'd you do in 2014?
We had a huge party, and there I danced all night and had so much fun, and then had to like fly to New York. Like it was so much fun, and I got to totally enjoy it with everybody, my family, and I like cried and I was emotional. And I just could be there with all the guys on the team and just totally be present. So,
go ahead, Robbie.
I was going to say, walking out to the U.S. Olympics was cool.
Yeah. Now I'm going to say, Annette,
I think it was 2014. Was that that after party? Was that at some huge? It's like an auditorium or like a stadium or something.
It was.
I think I was there.
Yeah, B.
Because that's when you guys beat Houston, right?
No, that was before that.
Oh, you're okay. Yeah, okay. So I went to that one then.
Bees is always at the party. He's not.
Yeah. I went to the after party. Yeah, I remember that. I do remember that.
Nah, Bees, you was there for the sponsorship situation.
Right? Yeah, sponsorship. Yeah.
I think they had it in LA Live.
Remember that? That's what it was. Yeah. So that was 13 then. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But listen, it was. I think it was 12.
Was it 12?
Yeah.
But listen, Robbie,
I'm old, man.
I just want to make sure everybody realizes.
94.
Woo! I was only 36 then.
Well, thank you, Rob, for taking the time, man. Again, you're such a better player than these two guys on the podcast. You're definitely a legend in this game, not because you came out, right? Because of what you accomplished on the field. And then I know from college playing with Kwame and Mo and those fools and winning championships in Maryland, who you are and what you've established in as a U.S. soccer player, man. So you just want to say thank you so much for everything you've done. And the trailblazing, you will continue as a producer. But these guys get mad at me. Always have one last question.
I got a question before your last question.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Let him get off the podcast. This is personal.
He's got business to do.
Robbie used to make beanies, and I want one of them beanies.
I think I still have them. They're really cool.
He gave me one back in the day. I was like, I still got it. I was like, yeah, I need to get one of these again.
I love those.
Robbie, what are you taking from
in Columbus?
What are you taking from the field into the boardroom, into the writers' room, into the, being a producer? What?
I mean, definitely, hard work. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's all these like cliches and cheesy things I can say to people, but it's so true. Like athletes, we work our asses off even when we're sick or injured or exhausted and jet lagged. So that's definitely one thing. And then one thing I wish I could get rid of a little bit is being competitive.
Yeah.
don't get rid of that.
Yeah.
It's to a point where I'm like, you know, it's pilot season. I'm reading everyone's scripts to see if our script is better than theirs. Calm down. So
Gooch competes on everything on this show. I mean, it could be the microphone. It could be the way your shirt fits. I mean,
do you see the negative energy from Mookie always directed at me for no reason?
It's light skin.
He's mad. He's not the only light skin on this podcast.
Yo, Robbie, again, man, thank you so much, man.
Thank you, Robbie. Appreciate it, best of luck. Appreciate it, man.
I love this, and it's flattering. I don't feel that way about myself, so it's cool to hear you guys.
Now you know, brother.
You know, all the questions and everything. So thank you so much.
Man, thank you, man.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay. All right, Robbie.
Peace. It was dope for me to realize that he's the one who brought the project to his staff. I mean, that shows, I keep it real. I thought that he was just, maybe his husband thought, because he's a former athlete, for him to be a part of it, but for him to have the thought process and to realize to see this through, it's a good show.
He says he didn't have the swag or the push or whatever, but it seems like he's been knocking doors down. Like he got into the fashion school, had no fashion background, producer had no background. You know what I mean? Like
and now he's about to how do you say that in Hollywood life? He's about to go pitch.
Go pitch, go pitch his new
project.
New project.
You know what I'm saying? That's wicked. And the fact that, it's a soccer story that Mookie, what you talked about, that, there's not a lot of soccer stories out there about real shit that people went through. So I think that's pretty cool with him, what he's doing with Jorge.
Hey, you think Goose got a chance?
Zero.
If Mo don't got a chance, because Mo is serious about the situation. I'm sure Mo texts him every week. If Mo don't got a chance, Gooch, man. Unless
I guarantee Mo probably still be in the mirror looking at himself. He like
with his little script,
when Robbie call him, I'm gonna be ready. Yeah.
Mo right now is catching footballs, waiting for Spencer character to get hurt so he can take over that role. Big shouts to Mo and Dude, baby. Mo loves that stuff, man. But listen, man, Bees, make sure you go watch the rest of All American.
Oh yeah,
Again, I'm gonna keep it real. I think season two is a little bit more watered down.
All right, man, we heard you the first 10 times. Let's get through season one. First.
My bad. You're right. Stop talking
so I can go watch All American.
Well, listen, man, thank you so much for everybody for tuning in to and me and these characters, DeMarcus Beasley and Gucci and Yewu. I hope you get a chance to listen to our previous episodes. My favorite episode so far is Solomon Kalu, which is number 5 and 6. So make sure you go listen to both, and make sure you subscribe right to YouTube. Make sure you hit that like button. Also, make sure you subscribe to our iTunes, or if you're an Android person like myself, Spotify. And make sure you tell DeMarcus Beasley to get a haircut. All right. Much love, y'all.
It's all good.
Much love. Peace.
Peace.
Hey there, Brenda.
It's Carol.
Exactly. So which leg are we operating on?
You mean arm.
It's all connected.
Asking the right question can greatly impact your future.
Are you sure you're an orthopedist?
Actually, I'm a Sagittarius.
Especially when it comes to your finances.
Do you have a question?
Are you a certified financial planner?
Yes, I'm a CFP professional.
CFP professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's gotta be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.